this evening I want us to continue in our questions and hope. It would have been the third, except we spent a couple of seconds on each of the other ones as well. But casting burdens and talking about sufferings. And the last verse of this says, if our love were but more simple, we should take Him at His word, and our lives would be all sunshine in the sweetness of our Lord. Anybody here whose life is all sunshine? I just think kind of a sense of irony here that we're going to talk about burdens and suffering and our concept of God and just where, what about these burdens and casting burdens on the Lord or taking care of burdens and where does suffering come from as we deal with these questions that come about. William Willimon, and he used to be the chaplain at the Duke Chapel, Will Willimon, for a number of years, writing in a book, says, the problem, it seems to me, is not that suffering and pain exist in the world and that we feel them. The real problem is that suffering seems so random and so meaningless, crushing people as often as it ennobles them, falling upon the undeserving and deserving alike. Which then brings us to the point of burdens and sufferings, and is there a difference between the two? And how do we deal with those? How do we handle those? Rabbi Harold Kushner, in his book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, writes of talking with a woman about suffering and why bad things were happening to she considered bad things happening to her and to her family, and they were good people, and yet she saw people who weren't so good that weren't experiencing all these kinds of things. And Kushner put a little bit of a spin on it. He said, he asked her, what about your prayers? Were your prayers left unanswered? You faced a situation that could easily have broken your spirit, a situation that could have left you a bitter, withdrawn woman, jealous of all the intact families around you, incapable of responding to the promise of being alive. But somehow that did not happen. Somehow you found the strength not to let yourself be broken. You found the resiliency to go on living and caring about things. Like Jacob in the Bible, like every one of us at one time or another, you faced a scary situation, prayed for help, and found out that you were a lot stronger and a lot better able to handle it than you ever would have thought you were. In your desperation, you opened your heart in prayer, and what happened? You didn't get a miracle to avert a tragedy, but you discovered people around you and God beside you and strength within you to help you survive the tragedy. I offer that to you as an example of a prayer being answered even in the middle of burdens. What do you think of Willimon's statement? The real problem is that suffering seems random and meaningless, crushing people as often as it ennobles them, falling upon the deserving or the undeserving and the deserving alike. Do any of us deserve burdens? Are any of us undeserving of burdens? Okay. Well, and of course, I'm thinking, too, when he says falling upon the undeserving and deserving alike, does that trigger any kind of scripture passage anywhere? Rains upon the fields of the just and the unjust, and the sun shines upon the fields of the righteous and the unrighteous. That's right. The workers in the vineyard, regardless of how long they were there, were paid the same price. But what is it about burdens, and what makes a burden necessarily different from suffering, or are there differences? Sarah said, read the second paragraph. Well, suffering is being... A burden can be secret. A burden can be, but can a burden not be painful and cause you pain? Or can become that, okay. There are many types of burdens that weigh heavily upon us. Some of us experience physical burdens, right? Eyesight's going. Hearing is worse. Aches and pains due to arthritis and other things are worse. By the way, my wife asked me a question today when I said something. She said, "What?" I said, "Both my hips hurt, both my knees hurt, both my wrists hurt, and my left shoulder hurts." And she said, "Been taking you glucosamine chondroitin?" I said, "No, I hadn't taken it about a week and a half." So. That's right. But there are times I think it doesn't help. But Hazel, what? No, I'm, yes, ma'am. Oh, it does. It does. Diseases strike. What about others? Financial burdens. Sometimes we bear those and we don't let other folks know. Family issues that arise call our burdens. Sometimes that seems to be. Yes, things that purview. And you're right. There are some burdens that we can't. And yet, are there not other burdens that perhaps we can? Yes. And they may seem almost insurmountable. Tragedy strikes. Death seems imminent. Spiritual questions arise. I was talking with someone the other day, and they said that it's really kind of interesting that their mother, who has been a churchgoer and sang in the choir and did all kinds of things for all of her life, all of a sudden the other day said, "You know, I don't believe in God anymore." She's in her mid-80s. "I don't believe in God anymore." She said, "Really?" She said, "No, I don't." She said, "But Mother, you did all these things. And why did you do them?" She said, "Well, I don't know, but I don't believe in God anymore. I mean, because all these things are happening to people that I know and friends that I know and everything." She said, "Yeah, but God can help." She said, "Well, I don't believe in Him anymore. In fact, when I said my prayers last night, I told Him I didn't believe in Him." That's right. 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 Well, they do. They do. Well, these are a burden. Because I'm going to tell you, I don't care what they say in the stuff, you still have to take them off to get the full feel through the binoculars. And they still fog up in this deer stand. But you have to pull them off. Now, but we have these other kinds. And we wonder sometimes what other burdens people carry. I know that there have been some folks who have said to me, you know, and one in particular who has said on numerous occasions in different, and not just me, but other people in different venues, and, you know, I sit there and I look out on the congregation every Sunday and I'm thinking about all the burdens that some of these folks out here are carrying that we don't even know about. Or maybe some that we do and we wonder how they're bearing up. We all have burdens that come upon us. And actually the word for burden, as you'll see down here, the word for burden that is used in Galatians chapter 6 is the word that is used of a pack that a soldier carries. In secular Greek that Paul uses here. My friends, if anyone is detected in a transgression, you who have received the Spirit should restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. Take care that you yourselves are not tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. For if those who are nothing think they are something, they deceive themselves, all must test their own work. Then that work, rather than their neighbor's work, will become a cause for pride, for all must carry their own loads. And the word there that's translated load can also be translated burden. It's the same Greek word. The burden, the word for burden or load here is that of a soldier's pack, which he must carry. There are some things that we must carry. They're part of who we are and part of our lives, and they may not be easy, and they may be almost overwhelming. A couple of examples here. I mean, what are the burdens do we bear? Guilt, grief over sinfulness, grief over our actions. Attitude has a lot to do with it. Didn't know if you know that at age 55, George Friedrich Handel had a massive stroke, and he was paralyzed. He was living in poverty when he wrote the Hallelujah Chorus. And the stories are that when he finished that, he talked about how great a weight and a burden had been lifted from him. Of course, Helen Keller. Thank God for her handicap. In fact, she is quoted as saying that I thank God for my handicap because if I did not have it, I would not have found so much in others or God himself. So we're called upon to bear our own burdens, and sometimes that's not easy to do. I ran across this one, and I thought it was kind of interesting. I never knew that the guy who invented Braille was named Louis Braille. He was blinded by an accident when he was a young man. His father had a harness workshop, and he was there and was blinded. And over time, he invented the system by which blind persons can read, the Braille system. He bore that burden, but he bore it in such a way that he was able to help other people with the solution that he found. So sometimes we are called or we have burdens which we have to carry. He could have seen that as a means of suffering and been completely down, but instead he turned it into something that was a positive. Handel, living in poverty, turned it into something positive. Have you known folks who you wondered and how they bore up the burdens and yet they were the ones who lifted you up instead of otherwise? Or perhaps they worked through that, and even though they had a particular burden or handicap or something, they were still able to make something good or positive come out of it. So how do we handle burdens? First of all, there's some that we have to carry ourselves. Don't necessarily like that. But there are some things that we have to carry ourselves. By the way, when it says to bear your own burdens or bear one another's burdens, the word for bear here carries with it the image of a properly balanced load, whether on a beast of burden or on a ship or a wagon cart. That when we carry our burdens or if we help someone else bear their burdens, what we're attempting to do is find a proper sense of balance. Balance between the burden that sits and weighs heavily upon us and between handling that or handling it with God or with others. Sometimes we have those questions and we ask about the burdens and we ask about the sufferings and we've got one of two ways to go. We can either let them do what? Overwhelm us, destroy us, or we can seek a positive way to deal with them. Now, all this is a whole lot easier to say than it is to do.
Well, blind, and people with handicaps like that do better with what they've got than what I could possibly do and having all my senses and everything else. And that's where we need to be thankful for what we got and say half full instead of half empty. And that in itself will help.
And like the school for the deaf and the blind, playing football, playing softball.
Right.
Well, and it's, of course, sorry, I got this, my brain, but I remember Bill Cosby talking about visiting Ray Charles one time. You know the story. He goes in to visit him, and he knocks on the door and rings the doorbell, and he hears Ray come. And he said, I go in, and there's no lights on anywhere. I said, Ray, where are you? He said, I'm in the bathroom shaving. He said, before I could even think, I said, Ray, what are you doing shaving in the dark? You might cut yourself. He said, Ray said, I always shave in the dark, Bill. But, you know, what we would see as a burden, some people are able to do and overcome and carry that burden very well, as opposed to sometimes when we think it's a burden and we don't carry it very well. And there are those who, I mean, we have to bear our own burdens, yes, but then there are times when we're called upon to bear one another's burdens, and sometimes some folks will do everything they can to take their burden and shift it over to you to let you bear it. But we're called to bear one another's burdens, which is not really an overly popular thing. It seems to me, now I know there are a lot of folks in this fellowship and around this area who go out of their way to help other people and do it oftentimes without any sense of not even wanting to be thanked by the person they're helping, much less any other recognition. But there are a lot of folks these days, I seem to see more and more of them these days in the world, that take the attitude, well, I got my own problems. You handle yours yourself. You know, their burdens aren't, your burdens are not my business. You know, to help you. You know, although I might talk about you someplace, but you know, I'm not, it's your business as far as dealing with it. You deal with it yourself. I've got my own problems. There are others that see, well, that's survival of the fittest. If you can't handle it, you know, get out. Don't worry about it. And I see that kind of thing. But that's not what Christians are told to do. Yet I'm not going to ask for a show of hands how many of us sometimes have felt that way or thought that way or even said it, even as Christians. We're told that burden bearing fulfills the law of Christ. Bear one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Well, what was the law of Christ? To love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. That fulfills the law. When he was asked, what is the greatest commandment? In other words, what's the greatest thing in the law? And Jesus said, love God and love your neighbor. Jesus is also the one that says, pray for those who persecute you. Then you'll be children of God, for God causes the rain to fall upon the fields of the just and the unjust. Williman says, a remarkable thing happens when we reach out to help someone else. It enables us to live in the present, focusing on present needs, and fills it with meaning and richness. When you help others in their struggles, it also strengthens your own life. You discover that you are fortified and strengthened yourself as you help them. To be in the present. I'm reminded of a story that I read some time ago, which goes along these lines. And there were two guys that met on the street, and one of them was financially and position in society better off than the other one. And they were going along, and the guy who was not as well off was walking by, and he simply spoke. And the other guy said, wait a minute. He said, why are you, way I treat, all you're just going to do is barely speak. He said, you ought to be. The guy who had position and money said, you ought to be showing your gratitude to me. And he said, why? What have you done for me? He said, well, you know, you almost drowned a few years ago, and I happened to be there, and I jumped in the water and saved you. He said, well, I thank you for that. He said, yeah, but you really ought to be grateful. If it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be here. And he said, well, you know, so what have you done for me? He said, well, you know, you were in trouble financially. I loaned you some money. He said, I paid you back, didn't I? He said, yeah, but it took you a while, but you ought to really be grateful. I said, well, so what have you done for me lately? The guy was looking to the past rather than seeing the present and was living in the past and resting upon those laurels and still making this other guy pay emotionally for what was done in the past while not living in the present to help. One writer says, when we do this in the present, it helps keep us focused on present needs and gives meaning for life today, not just in the past. Now, have you ever sat and had to deal with a burden all by yourself? How'd you feel? If you haven't, how would you imagine you would feel if you had a tremendous burden and you had to sit alone and deal with it yourself? Or felt like you had to? Okay. It's happened to you and you sat there and talked to God. God will help you with it, but how did you... No. But how did you feel though about it though? Sitting there all by yourself and nobody else around to help. Okay. Empty, lost, way down, depressed. Have you ever had a time where you had a tremendous burden and somebody learned about it and you didn't even ask for their help, but they, what can I do to help you? Even if it was just listen or sat with you. And how did that make you feel? How would you imagine it would make you feel if you've never experienced that? But I think probably most of us have at some point in time or another. Dealing with a burden and got so far down, but then somebody steps up and they, how can I help? Even if it's just sit and listen. Okay. Lifts out of the depression and gives you hope. Gives you hope. Think about how hard. Okay. Burden slides off when you got somebody to share it. It's that whole idea of helping each other properly balance. Now, that doesn't mean if you go stick your nose in everybody else's business all the time if it's not wanted. But to make the offer, even if it's just how can I help you? What can I do to be of assistance? I'm praying for you. Is there anything else I can do? If we, when we have those things and we think about how hard it is to bear a burden by ourselves, when we're helped by others, it helps us be able to deal more easily with it, right? And it almost sounds biblical, bear one another's burdens. Think about some of the burdens that Paul dealt with. Or burdens that, burdens and suffering that Paul dealt with, his thorn in the flesh. Think about in his humanity what a burden it must have been on Jesus to know that he was here to help and yet was rejected by so many. In fact, at one point in his suffering, what did he say? In Gethsemane. Take it away. Father, if there's any other way. So being helped. Yeah, just. The ones that he wanted to help him bear, they couldn't make the decision for him, but help him bear up and bear that burden of Gethsemane. And they went to sleep. And he comes and wakes them up. And they go back to sleep. And he comes and wakes them up. And they go back to sleep. Right. That's true. That's true, Susan. They were asleep to what was going on, even when they were awake. That is a metaphor. And so we come to that, and fulfill. But Paul says we fulfill the law of Christ. The law of service, the law of concern, the law of grace. Besides that, what does Ecclesiastes say about cords? I actually thought about bringing some sticks in here. I thought about some thread, but I didn't do that. And then I thought about gathering some sticks. You ever tried to break a bunch of sticks together? And then, but one by one, what can you do? You can snap them. Piece of thread. Pocket music, James Taylor. How sweet it is to be loved by you. How about that? One piece of thread, what can you do? Snap it. Four or five pieces of thread together, twist them together. Can't do that. The writer of Ecclesiastes says that one can be easily broken. If there's only one, there's nobody to pick him up. But if there's two, one can pick the other one up when they fall. And a three-stranded cord is not easily broken. The more opportunities that we have to bear each other's burdens, the stronger that we become together instead of standing out alone. And in that, there is hope that others are willing to stand with us and that others can stand with us. It helps us also to be less self-centered when we think of bearing others' burdens. And sometimes when we do that, our own burdens don't seem so great when compared with some others, which can give us hope then to move beyond. A third way that that Bill Tutt suggests bearing with burdens is, of course, Psalm 55:22. Cast your burdens upon the Lord. We also find in the New Testament, cast your burdens upon the Lord, for He cares for you. We find, come to me, all you who are heavy laden and burdened, and I will give you rest. But as Chuck says, it's this, though, casting your burdens on the Lord is not a stoic approach that says, okay, grit your teeth and bear it. But rather, it is to draw upon the power that can sustain you beyond your own strength. That is, you recognize God is present with you to help you bear the load of pain and suffering. Psalm 55. Sarah, you got there already? Would you read it, please? 55:22. It's not just cast your burdens or your cares on the Lord and He'll take them away. But He will sustain you. And He will not let the righteous be moved. That is, He will not, if you remain steadfast with Him, in that you will not be moved to the point by the burden that you're overcome and overwhelmed. Now, that doesn't mean that we lose the burdens. Paul, I'm sure, prayed that that thorn in the flesh, whatever it was, would be gone. But later on in his letters, he talked about the thorn in the flesh, and I have a sneaking suspicion. I know some people think it's because he was short and hook-nosed and ugly. I've had people say that. I think, because of something he says in one of his letters, he says, you know, I know that there are some of you who would have plucked your eyes out and given them to me if that would have helped. That I think he had poor eyesight founded upon the fact that flash of lightning that knocked him off the horse and he was blind for 3 days. A constant reminder. And of course, if you got that kind of bad eyesight and they didn't have these things back then. Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, when he was blinded on the road to Damascus, he's blind for 3 days. And then something like scales falls away, but then he refers to his thorn in the flesh, and then he says, you know, I know that some of you would have plucked out your eyes and given them to me if it would have helped. You know, and like I said, you know, you don't have these and you walk around squinting, it might make you look kind of ugly. Yes. That's what it says. He fell off his horse.
I'm feeling sorry for him because he had to walk all over. You look amazing and everything else. He had a horse the whole time.
No, not the whole time. I was on the road to Damascus. He gets.
Okay. He borrowed that horse. I couldn't find it again.
Well. Susan, that's a very good question, and given the fact that Paul said he was a Pharisee among Pharisees, he probably was knocked off his high horse. and he was riding a horse, not a donkey, so he had further to fall. Yeah. But, you know, Paul, his thorn in the flesh. Once again, Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. If there's any other way, that burden that he was carrying, was the burden taken away? No. It wasn't. But God sustained him through it. Even when he said on the cross, my God, why? Yes, Susan.
That's what I think.
Some
people need to come in with modern religion that hides that, the word of Jesus and his life, that it is suffering and it is burden to bear. It is being those that we feel opposed to the Lord. If that's the gospel truth, it's not prosperity.
No.
And I think in our culture, the cause and effect relationship is if I'm really good, I'm going to get a reward. If I'm bad, I'll be punished. So therefore, God rewards and punishes us based on whatever
we do.
Yeah, and we see over and over in the Bible as well, and I'm like, that's not necessarily true.
No, it's not. No, it doesn't.
And it's not
No, a lot of things come on, and we don't understand why, and it's not our fault. But yes, I do think that a lot of times the folks with the prosperity gospel, especially hijack, to use your word, I think it's a very good word, hijack this whole thing. Right. Yeah, Ed said that earlier.
The 80-year-old woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I told him I didn't believe in him. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just not the gospel truth.
No. But, and we tend to go over, the only time we want to look at, Jesus says, they persecuted me. You need to expect to be persecuted. You need to expect to suffer. The only time we want to talk about that is if we're being persecuted by some other group. If that's not taking place, then we want to think about the prosperity and not the suffering and not the fact that life is not easy and we're not promised those things. Right. God in the mountains, God in the valley. Well, it does. And in all the years that I've been doing this kind of stuff, long time ago, probably back in the 70s, I was teaching a class, late 70s, and got to thinking. And along through that time, there was that song, I Beg Your Pardon, I Never Promised You a Rose Garden. And I was saying, And somebody said, God never promised us a rose garden. And my mind kind of went somewhere. And I said, I differ. God did promise us a rose garden. The rose garden is that joy and that peace and that presence with God. But I remember growing up and our next door neighbors, the Caudles, had a rose garden. It was bigger than this room. Bigger than this room. All kinds of roses. But in the dead center, among my favorites, are bright yellow roses. And in dead center, there were two or three right there in the center of this thing. Just absolutely beautiful yellow roses. And they had reds and pinks. But when they planted it, they weren't too swooped. And they took care of them, but when they planted it, they planted them close enough together that when those things grew up, guess what? The branches all intertwined and went together. And I said, you couldn't get to those, so one of two things had to happen. You either had to stay outside and enjoy the beauty and watch them fall off. And of course, when they're deadhead, then you don't get as many. But watch them fall off and not be able to enjoy them and enjoy their fragrance. Or you fought your way through the thorns to get to the roses so you could bring them in and do whatever. And I promise you, I know. You know. Probably some other folks know. You can think you've got practically every inch of your body covered, and then you go traipsing through the woods and get hold of some of those sawbriars, and you're going to find real quick that not every place is covered. You're going to get stuck. And so I was thinking, I explained that to the person who said this. I said, I do think God promises a rose garden, and that peace and that reward and everything's out there, but in order to enjoy it, we've got to decide if we're going to follow through the thorns of all those other rose bushes. And we're going to get stuck sometimes. And we're going to bleed sometimes. And we're going to hurt sometimes. But when we reach that particular point, is it worth it? Or are we going to stand outside and say, if somebody else brings it out here, okay, but I'll just stay outside. And the only way that you find the reward and the only way you find the satisfaction is to get stuck a few times and to get scratched a few times and to go through the thorns a few times. So I do think that, you know, we do give that false image when really, and then people say, but my life isn't that way. And I've got all these things, I've got all these thorns I run into out here, all these sawbriars. I didn't think it was supposed to be that way. Right. 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 Oh, it is. It is. Yeah, I think the beauty of the petals and that scent, but in a rose garden bigger than this room, unless the wind's blowing right, and then how do you distinguish? So I think you're right. There is that mystery and there's that elusiveness, but I also use that example to explain when people say, but you know, it's so tough. I thought it was going to be easier. God promised you the rose garden, thorns and all. And Paul had the thorns. Jesus had the thorns. So many others have had the thorns. No, well, they're going to go wilder if you let them deadhead, then you're not going to have the. So you've got to do work. It's not just sitting back, and it's not just traipsing through. You've got to do some work, and that's where that working with God and with each other and finding the journey. That's where the work takes place. But you're right. You're right. That's true. Where's the righteousness? Of course, I would ask, is the suffering for God's glory just for the sake of suffering, or is it getting through the suffering with God and each other that is for God's glory?
Like you told Paul, though, I'll show him how much people suffer with my suffering.
Yeah. That's true.
I think sometimes we don't hone in on our discipline, patience.
Yeah, timetables. It's like,
And you've got to abide with that patience and literally deal with it.
The thing is,
less and less, each generation coming up has less of, and they seem to have more problematic. I guess I'm getting older than you two or something like that. But,
well,
it just seems to be no control.
Right. Well, lack of self-control, but and lack of discipline. I want things quickly. I have, I would have students put these things away, especially come test time, because it won't quick and easy, that kind of thing. But it's no mistake that discipleship, discipline, all have the same root. You can't be a true disciple without being disciplined. And you can't really only the truly disciplined can show real discipleship. And you're. No. Yeah, the game. Yes, it does. Right. And the playing, it does change. But then again, that's also, I think, an offshoot of something I've talked about before about progressive revelation. That God gives me so much to handle for this period of time, and once I get a handle on it, and I understand it, and I get to this point, done. No, God says, okay, now I've got a little more to reveal, and now a little more to reveal. and a little more to reveal. And so it's not that we get new scriptures, but we get new understandings of scripture and of God and of ourselves and all that. But we don't get it all at once. We have to play, as you said, the playing field changes. Or in those games, I finally shut them off. I hadn't played a video game and I wouldn't win. Now, what frustrated me even more is our older son, Stephen, would sit down and play for 6 hours straight and beat the whole game. First time. I'm thinking, that's not fair. but yes, it does, and it bumps it up a level. But then again, discipline and discipleship, do we ever truly master it? Yeah, you. Yeah, and the Noble Eightfold Path, and
yeah,
all of those things. Well, I think a lot of times folks don't, because we want it. For a lot of years, and I thought it was dropping off some, but no, it's ratcheted up another level. We make it easy and painless so that we got the numbers. A lot of it's the numbers. There is a person in this state who, not too long ago, who is at a big box church, not too long ago, my son forwarded a YouTube video where he was talking with some other ministers at a conference, and said that if anyone ever becomes content or wishes to pastor a small church, then they are turning their backs on the calling of God to grow the church in size. It's also the same person who said, I'll tell you, and this is a direct quote, hope I don't offend you, but he said, I will tell you who the jackasses are in your church. They're the ones who tell you they want you to take them deeper in scriptures. When they say that to me, I say, well, let's go back here and check the financial records and just see how deep you are. But then again, that also means you don't have to do it if you're not working at it and challenging people to do it. I mean, that's a direct quote from it. I've got that YouTube video saved. But so I do think we try to make that too easy and too simple, and a lot of it is numbers driven and has been numbers driven. Instead of you can have quantity and quality, but a lot of times they jettison the quality for quantity. And think that we're more spiritual because we've got the quantity. Well, that's not how I was taught and trained or anything. And who knows, someday I may find out I'm wrong. But what I see in the New Testament, what I see in the examples in the Bible as a whole, is that the ones who truly have the opportunity to make any kind of real difference are the ones who are disciplined and the ones who take the time and never have enough time to really get there, but that doesn't stop them from trying to get there. Off the soapbox now. It's just like, and I know I've run over here, the next part we'll talk about more later, but you know, suffering. Why did it happen? The quick, easy answer was it's God's will. Such as accepted one, two missionaries' children had diphtheria. This is a true story. They both prayed for healing and recovery for both of them. One lived, one died, and their friends tried to console them by saying, "Oh, this was just God's will that one lived and one died." Story: Leslie Weatherhead, London minister, and we'll end here. Was in India. And he was sitting there on a veranda with a man in India who was a Christian, but whose son had died in a cholera epidemic. Sleeping on the veranda under a mosquito net nearby was his young daughter. while they were sitting there, and he kept saying, you know, well, I've got to accept it. It's the will of God. That's all there is to it. I have to accept that. I can't question the death. Weatherhead, sitting there after a while, said, well, suppose someone crept up the stairs onto the veranda tonight while you were sleeping, and they deliberately put a wad of cotton soaked with the cholera germ in your little girl's mouth. What do you think about that? And so the guy got irate. And he said, my God, what would I think if he attempted that and I caught him? I'd kill him with little compunction, just as I would a snake, and throw him off the veranda. What do you mean by suggesting a thing like that? How dare you? Well, his head said, I looked at him and said, but John, isn't that what you just accused God of doing when you said it, that is his son's death, was God's will? Call it the result of mass ignorance, mass folly, mass sin, bad drains, communal carelessness, but don't call it the will of God. Surely we cannot identify as the will of God something for which a man would be locked up in jail or put in a criminal lunatic asylum. And that's a tough question. But there are a lot of folks out there, that's the only way they make it through. Well, it has to be the will of God. Right. Yeah, we hope we'll understand why. But and I would submit to you, as is down here later, but we'll talk about this next time because I've already run over too much, is that if you've got a God that creates a universe and people who are given freedom of choice, then it's not God's will that bad things happen. Sometimes it's our freedom of choice that's abused that causes those things to happen. And natural disasters, you know, there are certain things built into the system of the universe that God makes. And sometimes those things get out of kilter. And sometimes, I mean, give me a break. How many of y'all, we're getting up a cruise? Yeah. How many of y'all want to go with us? We're going to go to Antarctica in the winter. and then you wonder why you can't get home. Because you made the choice to go to Antarctica in the winter on a cruise. Never summer in Antarctica. But... Antarctica's summer is like our winter. Yeah, but you know, but thank y'all. I really do appreciate these times and your input and your insight, and you know, it helps. I hope it helps you, but it helps me. And so thank you. Go in peace. Winterize your car and your outside faucet and stay warm the next few days.